Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. It's Jono here, and we are talking all things Burnmen. So if you haven't listened to the pod before, our Burnmen are those players who we're going to draft before round 12, but aren't going to return that value. So some perennial Burnmans in the past. We've had the likes of Sean Higgins, who should never have been drafted because he would just slip on a banana peel a la Mario Kart style and be out for the rest of the year. But as always, we welcome you, Stevie Fizz. How you doing?
Well, I still live in Ararat, so fucking kill me now. Yeah.
And the Statesman, he's looking very regal there, so it must be cricket season. I know the WBBL started on the weekend and the men not too far away.
Yes, and looking forward to it and plenty of hot takes tonight.
And as always, it's good to see he hasn't spoken before being spoken to. We welcome to you, Cam McLaughlin.
I've made it. I've done it. Hello. And let's do it. Let's get into it.
All right. We are talking all things Burnmen, the ones who are not going to return the value on us this year. And we're going to kick it off with you, Steve. Who have you got as your first Burnmen?
My first Burnmen is Justin Westhoff. Pretty easy. We've spoken about him a little bit previously, I think. Coming off a career year, he was absolutely super if you picked him up in draft last year. Averaged 102 Dream Team, 101 Supercoach. But looking at the career history, never averaged over 89 Dream Team before and only averaged over 91 Supercoach twice. His 98 average was his previous high in 2013, so 5 years ago, 6 years ago, however you're looking at it. Highest disposals average, tackle average, and hit-out average. And that's the key thing we really want to zero in on. He played so much ruck time with Paddy Ryder injured for a lot of last year and no backup ruck, well, discernible backup ruckman at Port Adelaide. But now we know Port Adelaide have brought in Lysette. We can assume Paddy Ryder's going to be fit to start the year. So it stands to reason that the hitouts and tackles are going to dry up to usual levels. Okay, so now if we have him coming in, still at his 19.9 disposals per game, which career high again, and let's say his hitouts drops from career high 8.3 to 3.3 a game, which would still be his second highest ever hitout average, and his tackles drop from one and a half per game from 4.9 to 3.4 again, which would be his second highest career. He loses 11 points per game, and in Dream Team that takes him from a 102 average down to 91, and that's really where it hurts because you're talking about the third best averaging forward heading into the season is someone who is, I mean, they're fine, but you're talking about someone who's going to be going in that second and third round wraparound area to someone who's going to return value on, say, what would be a fifth, sixth round pick. And I think the real big thing is we've seen the DPPs get teased by AFL Fantasy on Friday afternoon, and Westhoff's added ruck forward status. So he's added ruck to his forward status. And I think people will get sucked in with the added ruck status as though it matters. Now, if he actually is going to average 102, then fine. He's actually good as a ruckman, but should you be drafting him a ruck in round two or three? Probably not. You should be drafting him forward there. But I think he drops 11 points. That's my personal opinion that's very likely to happen. You can't start him as a ruck. That's essentially starting Tom Bell Chambers, which is fine, but you've drafted Tom Bell Chambers in round 22. So that's the real big issue. If you think that he's actually going to, say, play a wing role and he's going to run around all day and get 23 touches and he's going to make up the hitouts and tackles through marks and disposals, then that's a story you could tell yourself. I don't see it happening. We saw Jared Pollock had a ripping year on the wing for Port Adelaide, averaged 92. So I think there's big problems with Justin Westhoff. I really think he's going to go super early in drafts, especially when you consider the likes of Danger's probably going to go top three in a lot of drafts, probably definitely top five. Devin Smith probably go right there with him in the back of round one or something like that. I think someone's going to snap at Westhoff a bit too early, and I really don't think he's going to return value.
Yeah, I totally agree. And T to be blunt, I think he's the most obvious burn man for next year. And a great call on a burn man is when they've just had a career high, and certainly when their positional play is under question, that's really when it's going to come. Unfortunately, the downfall when it comes to the point scoring. But I will say that he has the ability to fulfill many roles, which makes him quite handy. So if he was to be a wingman that floats loose when he can, he's got the ability to score high. The reality is there just seems to be less and less opportunities for him going forward for Port Adelaide.
Do you think they use him as a good personality Tom Lynch role, just play between the two 50 lines, similar to a Pollock role, but hybrid it with the good personality where he can go forward, kick maybe two or three goals a game, four or five marks? It's going to be interesting to see how Port Adelaide use him.
Well, I think that's sort of what he did the year before. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he sort of just freelanced.
Oh, he was an everywhere man. Yeah. But I mean, like, he's just between the 250s and that's it.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think he's just going to continue to freelance. But again, I just don't see the upside. And maybe it is an obvious call, but I really think that, especially checking social media, people seeing him adding the ruck status as though it matters. I think it's a downside. I think it's going to suck someone in your draft.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It certainly won't be me. I'll get him in round 15. Righto, the player I'm going to talk about is Mr. Scott Dependlebury. I see him having a fall of grace this year at the Collingwood Footy Club. As we know, Dane Beams was added to that midfield group. The way I see it, Pendlebury, we saw Nathan Buckley use Pendlebury in that role dependent, where he either sitting down there in the back line as a playing a role there, or he's pushing up forward, trying to take a contested mark and kick goals. That's where I see him this year. We know he's got great marking abilities, great time and awareness. It's like he's got an extra few seconds on his opponents. So he went as an ADP of 25 this year, so that's a second round pick, and averaged just over tick over 100 in both formats this year. But I can see a 5 to 8 point points dropping if he is played as that lockdown defender, or someone as a sweeper in that back line, or as that forward as well, because they've got some talent in that midfield. You've got Adams, Treloar, Beams, Sear coming through, and Phillips. They all can't play in that midfield group, so I just think Pendlebury's got that versatility to play anywhere around the ground, and he's the one who's going to lose the points, and I certainly won't be taking him in the second or third round. I'll just be holding back on him and let someone else take him.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Jono, I think you make a good point that someone's going to miss out at Collingwood, and it could very well be Pendles. We've certainly seen the numbers come down over the last few years. I'm unsure he goes in the second or third round. Maybe in your super coach, he's in the third round with the name value of Pendlebury. Yeah, I mean, maybe. Could he gain DPP, though?
Oh, maybe later in the year, but 103 average in Supercoach in the third round, there's probably still some better midfielders floating around, you would think.
Yeah, I think it's pretty important as well to have a look at the back end of his season, because that's when he sort of he trailed off significantly as far as scores go, you know, for Pendlebury. Round 20, 72. Round 21, 74. Round 22, 89. He went bang in round 23, but I think that's probably consistent with someone of his approaching the latter quarter of his career. But also, it was, I'd suggest, a positional switch already in those games as well.
31 next year, early next year. Yeah, Statesman, who have you got there for your first Burnman, mate?
Well, I'm going to make 31 sound very young with this one. Now, I will say this is a bit of a hot take, because he's a player that I've been a huge fan of, not only watching football, but in fantasy football for a long, long time. But there's always a moment in someone's career where you've got to start thinking in the next phase. And the person I'm talking about is Kate Simpson. So with the alignments of positions, I can see that Cade is probably going to be in a situation from his 2018 scoring rolling into 2019, about the third or fourth highest averaging defender. Now, this is based on a season where he has gathered the most kicks he's ever had in his career, although some of the stats, marking and tackling, have actually gone down. So he's had a downward scoring trend for the past 3 years. So what I'm probably seeing is a slight change of role coming together, especially with Sam Doherty coming back. And I actually also think that you're going to see Carlton be a much improved side. And I know I said that in last preseason. I think that is definitely the way it's going to go. And at 35 years of age in May, they need to start planning for life after Cade Simpson. Now, I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination will he lose his position in the team, but I just think his role will become less important and will be more of a support role, guidance, and use him as an on-field leader. So heading towards more what Luke Hodge is actually doing at Brisbane, which is not so much about getting the footy, but also ensuring that he's directing and giving support, directing the traffic and giving the support. So I probably see his downturn to be like it was in 2013, which was after a three-year decline, averaging around the 85 mark. Now, Cade Simpson, with the name brand and also the fact that he's from last year's scoring, still in that top five region of defenders, I see him going in the third or fourth round. But in reality, I'm predicting his scoring will actually drop to a D3 or possibly a D4. So that could mean that his value is around about the round 15, 16, not the round 3 and 4, which is where he's most likely going to go. Of course, with age becomes more injury risk. That's not a hunch, but he's been a very versatile player for a long, long time, playing over 300 games. But the reality is we all get older. We all get more vulnerable with injuries at elite sport when we are that age.
I can't believe you're giving such good praise to such an old man, statesman. It's just bewildering.
I've been a big fan for a long time.
He has been a great player for a long time. But I do agree with you. I think there's got to be a downward trend somewhere, and maybe next year is the way it is.
Well, I find it really, really hard to be throwing shade on Cade Simpson. I've got to be honest. We've seen him and Doherty both score massive together. He never misses. You talk about a drop to an 85, that'd have him as a D2. So, I mean, I'm still pretty cagey on. I don't know. I find it hard to believe. I'll put it that way. He looks like a guy who could play for 3 more years.
Does he? I haven't watched much Carlton because I like to enjoy my Saturdays. But who takes the kicks? Is it him or Doc?
Simo was taken when Doc was out last year.
Because that will be that. I mean, if he loses, if Mark's dropped down, because of the way the kick ends are coming, he could actually pick up some more plus threes anyway.
But they probably drop because they used to do the old chipperoo 1-2 to each other, kick Mark handball to kick and handball Mark to each other. So that's where he got that. So that's probably where the drop came in this year because they weren't sharing the pill out of defence.
That's really interesting. It's sort of why we, like, you know, look at prioritising defenders. I mean, look at the drop between a 95 to an 85. That's huge. It's 10 points, but it's not many players because there's not many elite averaging defenders.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's going to be funny because someone's going to take, like, Danger early and on the wrap get, like, a midfielder and Cade Simpson as their number one defender. I mean, you could be in all sorts if what Statesman's saying happens.
Yeah, definitely. Who have you got there for your first burn man there, Cam?
So I've got Jack Crisp. So Crisp in general is a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde situation. I think owners this year would have felt that, where he sort of mixes those 110s up with 50s and 60s. And generally speaking, I'd take that every day of the week for my D3 to D5. I'm all about high risk, high reward. That's my jam. But I think this year coming up, there's a couple of reasons why he might be more Jekyll than Hyde. Everyone's talking about the impact of Dane Beams arriving in the Collingwood midfield and the scoring output of people like Saidy, if C is going to even get a game, you know, all those sorts of questions. But Jack Crisp is this guy who plays defence and pinch hits at the midfield. And I actually think he's the person, or he's one of the people that's going to be affected most by Beams coming in. He should see less rotation through the midfield and play more permanently in defence. And unfortunately, when he does that, you know, history tells us that that's when those Jekyll games come out and he starts to score, you know, quite low. He plays a sort of marking defender and doesn't run at all through the midfield. I don't think, you know, he's been quite consistent from a defender's perspective over the last 4 years, but I'm actually predicting him to go somewhere in the area of 79 AFL fantasy points, which would be his lowest score in 4 years. But the second point as to why I think, you know, I have big question marks on him is I start to think about, well, what is a 79 defender next year? Like, where does that actually sit? Because if we think kickouts are actually going to count as a kick, there's going to be 18 defenders that are the primary kick intaker for their club that'll see a boost. They'll see a boost from the amount of kicks that's counting to their score, and Crisp is not that guy for Collingwood. So it's primarily been Lyndon Dunn. When he got injured, it was Howe, and Maynard was pinch hitting in there as well. It means that my take is that the mean score for defenders will actually rise, and 79 this year, which, you know, coincided with the 23rd best defender in the league, could be as low as 33rd best defender next year, right? And so it actually drops him further and further down. And at that point, in a 5-7-1-5 10-team league, I wouldn't feel comfortable taking him until round 15. Whereas previously, he's probably a top 7 defender. Big drop.
That's a pretty fire take.
I was just going to say, so going from 87 fantasy to 95, almost 96 super coach, you think he's dropping down almost 20 points.
I think the good parts of his role are about to be taken away by someone else. And I think there are a lot of defenders that are going to see an increase in score, meaning that his drop will be amplified.
Who's the main weapon out of defence for Collingwood?
Lyndon Dunn.
Who's
missing
with an ACL?
Jeremy Howe.
He's not a running defender.
Oh, sorry, you mean bringing out Langdon, maybe?
No.
And Murray, he's hanging out with Bennell, isn't he?
To me, Crisp is the guy they're going to want to give the ball to unless we see someone go into defence.
And that was a point that I missed in regards to, they've got the luxury now of having a cheeky Beams in the midfield. And to echo Jono's point about Pendles, I actually think the Pendles will be that guy. They've got the luxury of moving a superb ball mover to a playmaker role. That, to me, is something the Bucks shouldn't pass up.
Oh,
hasn't gone below 80 in the last 4 years in both formats.
I know. I'm comfortable saying 79. Cool. That's exactly why I've pulled in 79, because I think it's going to be his worst in four.
I think it's really interesting. You got to look at like what the guy's getting in contested, because to get 8 contested possessions as a defender is really good, like on a per game basis. He wins his own ball. I have a tough time seeing, if the Collingwood midfield's putting on a lot of pressure, I still think Jack Crisp is going to pick up enough points to get by. I mean, I don't know. I love the call. Like, it's a huge call.
So he finished top 20, was it this year? Did you say 25?
No, so 79 points would be 23rd best defender. He actually finished like 8th, I think.
8th.
Yeah. And this is the thing about like averages, is like he finishes there, but I don't think anyone's drafting him. Like, his averages are, like, the last 4 years, hasn't missed a game. 91, 84, no. 88, 87 in Dream Team, and pretty comparable in Supercoach. I mean, those are great numbers, but I don't think anyone's drafting him expecting 100 average.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. They're expecting the yo-yo, right?
Well, I mean, that's kind of
Grant Birchall, 80 to 85. That's it.
Fuck me. Is he still playing?
Yeah, yeah. He's high on my draft.
Who knew?
Back in pog form, boys.
That's it.
I don't know. Oh, man. I guess that's one I'm... Yeah.
It's an interesting one. He's going to be a hard one to rank, that's for sure.
I know someone at Collingwood's missing out, but, I mean, they're still going to be a good team. They're still going to be turning the ball over. Like,
especially when you've got Taylor Adams kicking the ball.
Like, what's... Like, Jack Chris must be loved there. What's he done wrong? Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. I don't know. It's a good one. I like it. Steve, who have you got there for your second burn man?
Yeah, well, I've gone from easy to even easier. Luke Bruce, I've got dropping off. And just hear me out, because I think someone's going to draft Luke Bruce early. And when we go into next season, Luke Bruce will be listed as forward 18 by average in Dream Team, forward 13 in Supercoach. That's pretty damn high end, if we're telling the truth. And players in that who are drafted in that range are typically taken around the 8th, 9th round, which is still first half of the draft pick. And if in Supercoach, F13, that's probably going to be around 6 or 7. So still quite early, still a lot of handy players on the board. Why does that matter? So in 2018, Luke Bruce was very, very good for fantasy, especially in the second half of the year, went full ham, absolutely ham. If you had him in your team, especially in Supercoach, you were doing really, really well because you probably scooped him off the waiver wire. He averaged the 84 Dream Team, 95 Supercoach, which is about 10 Dream Team and 12 Supercoach points higher than usual. So his usual numbers would have him at around an F5 player in Dream Team and basically a fringe rosterable player in Dream Team. So his ADP in Ultimate Footy this year was 250. So
nice.
And these are the numbers he's posted across his career. Certainly not someone you want to be spending around 6, 7, 8, 9 round pick on. So it would seem logical that he returns to his usual averages, despite the fact that there's nothing statistically outlierish in what he did this year. The only disposals he's done before, marks he's done before, goals and tackles he's done before, but he's just never done them in the same year. And the reason I'm predicting that he'll fall back to his usual mid-70s averages is they've picked up the Chad. Now, we know Cyril Rioli just retired, and he only played 3 games this year and 7 the year before. And I think it's part of the reason why Bruce had a great year. His best scores were with Cyril out of the team. The thing that Chad Wingard does are eerily similar to what Luke Bruce will need to do well to score. So I just see his volume dropping off a bit. And that's the thing. You look at Luke Bruce's numbers, and they're not huge, but when you add them all up together, they turn into an F2. So if he drops just a little bit anywhere, the difference between being an F2 and being an F5 unrosterable is just that tiny. It's 10 points, which is a mark, a kick, and a tackle. So I really think the Chad is going to have a seriously negative effect on Bruce. I don't think he's leveled up, and I'm certainly not spending around 8-9 pick on him.
No, I completely agree with you. I was actually looking at Luke Bruce myself as the burn man, but you got in first, but... Yeah, I don't want to bar him, and we'll only be using him in matchup-dependent games for 2019.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if he backs up. Like, I was just looking at his numbers from the back half of this year, and there's a string of 6 games where, you know, if you take out a 46, he goes 124, 131, 109, 165, and 114. He's not backing that up, but that is fantastic.
He was on fuego, as they used to say on ESPN.
That's why you got the All-Australian, but yes, I will not be having a bar of Luke Bruce next year. If you've got a couple of Hawthorne supporters in your league, just see if you can sell the farm to them, especially if it's a keeper league. My second burn man is the one and only Lance Buddy Franklin. He will be 32 in January and coming off another 100 averaging year in 2018 because he was the sole forward in that football team. I just can't see him backing it up. He's been in Sydney now for about 5 or 6 years, and he's just been the man, getting banged up week after week, year after year. 32 next year. The injuries are starting to catch up to him. We've seen the hip, the groins, the ankles, this, that, and the other. So he just cannot be trusted anymore. And I think they're actually going to start managing Franklin, where he's just going to be sitting in that forward 50 now. Like, I know they re-signed Tippett. Sam Reed's coming back from the ACL. But I think they're going to manage him because he's still got, what, another 45 years on that contract. And they need him up there. And for someone who was an ADP of 33 this year, if you're getting him in the third round, then I just don't see that 100 average coming, especially when there's a pretty good depth of forwards this year. You've got your Danger, your Lunch Meat, your Dunkleys and McLeans and that. So I don't want any part of Lance Franklin in 2019.
I think you're wrong, Jono. He's still got another 18 years left in his contract.
Sorry.
So if he's got that long, then obviously the club's planning him to play a fair few of those years.
And that's why they're going to manage him. And he might, whereas this year he never got the weeks off because they had no key forward, he might miss that 2 or 3 games where it does affect the average and the output of your team.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit worried. I think he'll still have a pretty good year. This year, his pre-season was pretty hampered. He basically said that he did nothing and still managed 100 average. But he's gone under the knife, I think, a week or two ago for groin surgery again. So just a niggle going into the pre-season. It's probably never too good.
No, groins. I don't like the groins. Like, we saw Robbie Gray early in his career, had the OP and all that, and really affected him. So, no, buddy for me, thank you.
Wait a minute, you're Mr. Robbie Gray.
I am Mr. Robbie Gray, but this was early in his career. Now that he's over his OP, I'm all about him.
Shape-shifting going on there.
Little backpedal.
I was very close to having Robbie Gray as a burn man, but then I realised he only did 84 this year in his junk, so it's hard to go worse than that for him, I reckon.
90-odd super coach, so retained. I think he retains mid forward. I don't know, I haven't seen that one, but he should. Statesman, your second burn man, please.
Yeah, I was actually going to go Shane Mumford, but I kept with the ruckman and just thought, well, maybe because of the suspension, he actually may not go early. So it probably reduced his worth, but I've seen a few players come back after having a full season off, and none of them have been that great, especially when their comebacks have been in the 30s. But I've gone for Stephen Martin. Now, this is a bit of a Jono gut feel option here. First and foremost, there's a real concern with the ruckman. We've talked about a couple of them so far in the pre-season build, but Steph Martin would currently be in the big three. Now, obviously, Brody Grundy's one, Max Gawn is two. There's only other one player that's actually averaged a ton in 2018, that's Steph Martin. My concern is the development and the future of this list.
Westhoff.
Yes, well, you are correct. So he's in the big four. It seems Westhoff's already been named and won't be playing in the ruck.
Big boy McAvoy?
Yeah, well, he's not. He didn't average a ton in 2018.
Yes, he did. Super coach.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God. Anyway, that ends the show here.
Sam Reed averaged a ton in super coach.
He played one half a game, didn't he?
Played one game. Got 104. That's his average. Yeah.
That's how sad it is.
But look, at the end of the day, I'm a little bit worried about the rule changes and whether they will help or hinder. I've had an early theory that your marking ruckman, your Grundys, your Goldsteins and your Gawns will only benefit from this. But Steph is more not a pack mark player. He's a running into space mark, a link, an extra midfielder. So I think at the moment the rules, I would suggest, aren't going to assist him. And you've also got the development of other ruckmen, and obviously Oscar, the big O, got that sort of opportunity this year. So at some point you need to start creating an actual opportunity for those ruckmen to start taking the number one mantle. Now, you never know where that is, so this is why this is a bit of a gut feel situation. So seeing he's in the big four, including the Hoff, with the new DPPs, I would suggest that he will go anywhere between rounds 5 and 8. My problem being here, we've seen Steph play the forward in the two-man ruck role before and average around the 60 to 70 mark during that stretch. I'm a little bit concerned that that's what we're going to start to see as they develop, whether it be Oscar or another one of their ruckmen on their list to be prepared to take over the number one mantle as soon as, I would suggest, 2020. So I'll probably see that transition happening next year. We all know that if Steph's the number one and the only one, he's going to build up midfield numbers, and that'll make him a very high scoring. So I can understand why people are going to take a punt on him yet again, but I just see him has the potential to be a massive burn man for 2019.
Yeah, he's probably someone I'm not targeting, but he's, like, for me, that type of player, the possession accumulating ruckman, the one who doesn't rely on tap outs, is the one I'm targeting. He's probably not the one, just especially with the questions about the split role situation. I'd much prefer Nank about 5 rounds later.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. And Cam, who have you got there for your last burn man?
So I've mentioned him a couple of times before. That
I'm George Holland Smith.
It's not
Luke Dalhouse.
It's neither of those two because I'm that confident about them.
You haven't spoken about anyone else, though.
Anthony Miles?
Bryce Gibbs. Anyway, so Bryce Gibbs is... I'm a little bit worried about him next season. And so it's not... It's a little bit of a mix of a gut feel, pure stats, and a bit of information we need to wait and see play out. But basically... 2018 was his first year at the Crows, and going into the year, I don't know if you remember, but there was a lot of apprehension about his fantasy scoring output based on what position and role he was going to play at Adelaide. And his role definitely changed. So he went from the primary accumulator at the Blues to second fiddle to Matt Crouch. So I think it was somewhere between 12 times Matt Crouch took out the honours throughout the season. Rory Laird took out a bunch as well. Gibbs finished with 2 top disposal efforts for the Crows. He still pumped out pretty fantasy-friendly numbers, finishing on an average of 103 AFL fantasy and 96.5 Supercoach, but I think this is where some people are going to get burned. After 4 straight losses, including being just crushed by the Hawks, Gibbs saw a tweak in role, which saw him spend more time in the forward 50 playing as a pressure forward. And it wasn't for full games, but it was definitely long stints. The first game they tried this, the Crows actually knocked off the future premiers in the Eagles, and subsequently won 6 from their remaining 9 games, which isn't bad considering before that they were 6 from their prior 13. Right, so they've made a tweak, it's been successful, and it's not a good tweak for his fantasy scoring output. To illustrate the point and the impact on the fantasy scoring, I've done a bit of a split in numbers. So before the role change, Gibbs was flying at an average of 107.6 AFL fantasy, which is, you know, brilliant, like very, very high-end, high calibre. And then after the role change, he dropped down to 98.3, which is quite serviceable, but it's certainly not 107.6, which would be elite, and would... you know, granted, be a first or second round draft pick if he maintained that going into next year. He's obviously still elite. That 10 points, I think, puts him at a different range for where you draft him. And going back on, I like to use sort of where he was ranked in the midfielders overall and where I think he'd go next year and who was around him as my barometer for where I'm going to actually pick and rank people. But he was the 17th best mid in the game and 21st overall in AFL fantasy. And it puts him in a category with Matt Crouch, Steel Sidebottom, Nat Fife, Jake Lloyd, Duncan, Zeret, Neil. But of all those people on that list, he would be the last one that you'd pick going into next year. So I just don't think that... I think someone will probably take him late round three as their second mid. However, I wouldn't take him before round five or six, considering I'm expecting a bit of a drop in scoring.
So this is where I'm going to absolutely burn you, Cam. I'm really sorry.
Sorry, the show's the burn men for the players.
Ah.
No.
I didn't realise that.
We need one of the hosts on there who would get burnt, so...
I'm actually new here, so I didn't know that. Who's... Like, you mentioned Zach Merritt, Lockie Neal, these guys. Right. Like, you said you would take him the last, and I think that's the point, is he would actually be drafted last. Like, I'm not ranking Zach Merritt behind Bryce Gibbs. I'm not ranking these guys behind Bryce Gibbs. Like, I've certainly got them in front of him and you know, Neal and that quite a ways in front of him. So, if he's averaged 98, I think you said, in the back half?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I think he's too good a player to not average near the 100. Like, I think he's going to be drafted in an M3 range, and that's... Like, I mean, is he going to be finishing worse than a mid-M4? Probably not. So, I sort of think that, like, where he gets drafted will probably... be where he finishes. Like, it's not going to be someone who's unrosterable.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah,
it's just gonna, like, I don't think he's gonna kill you is my point. Like he might have finished as the 17th best mid, but I don't think he'll get drafted as the 17th best mid, if that makes sense. Like, I think he'll get drafted sort of more in the early 20s, and if he finishes late 20s, you live with it. Yeah, I just think he's too good a player to really crap the bed. Like, he wins his ball in... He wins the uncontested ball. He wins the contested ball. He takes marks, lays... Like, wherever he is, he just scores. Like, I don't have any problem with Bryce. And everyone hates Bryce Gibbs for some unknown reason. So he always slides.
Yeah, you can. You definitely can get him on a slide. But my one hesitation is, if you look at his... I think he did... what did I say? He did 103 this year as his overall average. And if they saw success in him playing more of a forward role... he's going to gain points for tackles. He's going to drop points elsewhere. And I think it might be that he'll slide to something of a 95 from a 103. And that, I think, is enough for me to say, well, you know, you'd still draft him and probably in that mid-4 range, like you were saying, Steve.
If he dropped to a 95 or below, that'd hurt.
Yeah, well, some will fart in Brad Crouch's direction. He'll be out for the year and... happy days for Gibbs.
I just think I really like it. I think he's such an underrated player.
He is. He's the forgotten man of fantasy. He sits there on your draft board and is like, yeah, I'll get Gibbs. And you just keep falling. He's one of those players. So, yeah, happy to take him late. But, yeah, certainly won't be going early, as you said. We're going to leave the DPPs till last, but we do have some questions this week. I'm going to kick it off with Matty McGrath, and he asks, who are your top three interesting DPPs that have been released so far? Steve, who have you got there, mate?
Me? I'm assuming someone will talk about Dangerfield.
Who?
Go. Go Cats, man. Are you the Cats, man, by the way?
Yeah.
He is the cat man, but that's why he's gone with the
lead. I have a dog. It's just this whole conundrum. Yeah, Dangerfield, number one, interesting DPP. I didn't think he'd necessarily hold. And I think Warndog had a great tweet about how people are probably underrating him going into next year as well. And me trying to keep my Geelong goggles off, I'm trying my best not to be biased going in, but I am very excited about his year.
I mean, Hoff's interesting because he kind of shapes the way a draft goes, but the two that stand out for me, aside from that, are Tim Kelly getting forward midfield. Spoke about it on the speculation pod. I think he becomes very relevant as a forward. And Paddy Dow actually is a bit of a smoky, getting forward mid-status. Carlton maybe didn't do heaps to address their engine room. I know second year breakouts are a bit of a poo-poo, but he might be someone I'm willing to take late on a flyer. He doesn't have to do heaps to be relevant as a forward. So that's one I like. One player who's not a DPP per se, who I really liked, but got defender status, is Stephen Hill, who is very interesting to me.
Defender only as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean, John. He's not DPP, right. But it's interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I had Kelly and Danger as well. Had Akers, but I thought he didn't have it last year, but he did.
And how have Champion Data accessed the information to ensure Harley Bunnell was a mid only? Was it the 3 minutes he had at Peel Thunder when he ran out the water to one of the players?
Two games previous years where he actually played on the wing for about all of 45 minutes.
Right, fair enough. And that was seriously a joke, not having a crack at Champion Data.
Statesman, have a crack at Champion Data. Fuck them, like, honestly.
If you want some good listening, listen to SEN last, I think it was Thursday or Friday, when they were talking about all this stuff, and every single caller was just shit-canning Champion Data, and like, how the hell do they come up with all this data and just throw darts at a board? And
but I will say, Fantasy Freako and the Prospectus have been staples of my fantasy world, and I always liked the information they put out. And enjoyed it.
I would strample the Prospectus.
Oh.
Andrew Longdon asked, how hard is to rank Doc this year? He's sort of injury prone, ? No, not really. But how many players have gone ham after they've done an ACL? He can't think of any. And honestly, I can't really think of any either.
There's a St Kilda player, Lenny Hayes, come back and smashed it after coming back from an ACL, from memory.
But was most his full ACL or partial? I thought his was partial.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. That's not sitting in the memory bank of what the exact injury was, but I thought it was an ACL. Most people come back with a downgrade in performance. I always say an ACL's 2 years, so it's 1 year recovering from the injury and 1 year gaining your top end form. So, and I think talking about AFL fantasy, yes, he'll have a reduction, but he had one hell of a mighty year that he's getting the reduction from. So he would still be costing you in the salary cap format a 90. And for those that are drafting him, would still be taking him pretty early. So I'll be very surprised if he's a bargain any way, shape or form. So for a redraft league, he's just off my rankings.
I'll tack on, because the question was about how hard is it to rank him. I find it easy. I've got him D1.
Wow.
So that's that. And a player who's come back off an ACL is Adrian Peterson of the Minnesota Vikings. Tore his ACL and won the MVP the next year.
Wow. That's impressive.
Bang.
So, and the reason is this: like, I think Laird's going to drop. I think Lloyd's. I don't think Mills is going straight into the midfield like everyone says. So I think Lloyd's splits with and without Mills were very different. I think he drops. Whitfield could be the D1 if he wanted to. That's fine. But like, what did, like, we all remember Doc's massive year? Well, what did he do the year before? He averaged 100. Average 100. So if let's say Doc drops 10%, he still averages over 100. Like on his last year, I've got no qualms. I want every bit of it.
Go for it, you can have him.
Yeah, I've made my mind up. Yeah, I'm back end first round, started second round. Not too sure. I haven't made up my mind. Some bloke called Warney. He asks, any players who may gain DPP throughout the year in 2019. I've written down a couple. You could get Rocky, depending on how Port Adelaide play him. Could get forward status. We know he's a mid only. Dusty, he's a mid only. Can get forward status. Not that it matters, but Whitfield as a midfielder. Harms as a mid only. I would like to see you get forward status again, and possibly Bryce Gibbs, as Cam said, could get either a forward or defender status. So that's who I'm liking for 2019, who's potentially a DPP candidate, but don't draft on potential because we know what happens and you get burnt.
So true.
Does anyone have anyone to add?
I'd say Partif will get a mid, but not overly. Yeah, it's so early.
I would say my big thing would be to focus on situations that appear cramped and try to tell a story as to how it plays out. Like North Melbourne, right? They've got Cunnington. He's not going anywhere but the centre square. Jacobs, if they run a tagger. And then, you know, Higgins. So they've got their established mids. Now, they've added Hall, Polek, Tyson. Yes, they lost Clark. So maybe they need drive off half back. So does Hall go there? Does Higgins spend more time forward? See, these are the sort of players I'm looking at maybe getting DPP who are going sort of in the second half of a draft. The Pies, they added Beams. We sort of spoke about a few players who could maybe go forward or back. We saw with Geelong, they're very cramped. We saw Mitch Duncan play in defence a lot in the second half. So maybe he's someone who could get defender status. Hugh Greenwood, if the Adelaide players all come back, we've seen him be forward before. Zorko, Tommy Cutler. I think that's the important thing, is to tell a story as to how it happens. And yeah, Let's wait for some injuries in the preseason, because they will happen.
Now, this one triggered Steve on Twitter earlier. It's from our mate, We've Got Big Cox. He asked, why is white bread the superior bread to all other breads? Steve, I saw your return to serve and said he was emphatically wrong.
Well, sourdough and rye are the two top breads, let's be honest.
I'm more of a wholemeal man myself. But
wholemeal or whole grain?
There's a difference.
Oh, yeah, I can eat whole grain, but I can't eat wholemeal.
Jono looks like a wholemeal guy.
That's true.
Okay, there's a wholemeal and a whole grain. I don't know. It's whole, and I just eat an M and just grab it. It must be wholemeal then.
Maybe that affects his gut feel, because he's eating too much wholemeal, and his gut's all mixed up. Come on, Statesman, do you have a bread take?
Yeah, rye.
There you go.
Yeah.
Of course, I would go with the classy option. What else was I going to go?
Do they have rye and Ararat?
Pinot and rye.
Yeah, they do.
Pinot. What is this fancy bread they speak of? Adza08 Elf T on Twitter asked, which players over the last 10 years have been in the top three and they've each line have been consistently been able to do it? Like, he's mentioned Cox and Sandy and Ablett and Swan. I've come up with Pavlich, Ryan O'Keefe and Goods in the forward line. And I've also had, basically just Joel Bowden in defence because he was a star.
Chad Corns? He was good in defence. He was awesome.
Chad Corns, yeah. And was it Peter Burgoyne who was good?
Yeah, they were both good.
They were both good, yeah, but haven't looked at Sean's number.
Peter was always defence.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll say Nick Dalsano. He was a modicum of consistency at St Kilda as well.
Wait, so you're telling me that the top three in each position might not be dictated by talent? It might be dictated by things around them, say, oh, I don't know, people coming, people going, volume, maybe it matters. I don't know. Is it like Paddy Cripps had, like, Doherty and Gibbs out of the team and then just pumped out his career years? Could that happen?
No. You're talking too much logic here.
It's not like Clayton Oliver averages 7 points less with Jack Viney in the team. It's just a thing.
Stop it. You're starting to put facts in the story.
And we don't like that. At Mitch Bailey 3 asked, what do you think of the West Coast Eagles signing Josh Smith? Is he any chance of a game next year?
I would have thought he was depth at best.
I would think so too.
And it's so interesting as well, right? Because he's moving across the entire country to be a depth guy.
Hello, Braden Proust says hi.
No, he moved across the city. Right, yeah. But it's still
from
just
depth,
like,
to depth, though.
Yeah, I don't know. He will be a depth guy, but yeah, it's unfortunate for him.
He's been he's been a solid citizen. He's been good for fantasy when he played.
Yeah,
I would imagine there's small defenders they have they like more.
Brennan on Twitter asks, "Will Tom I'm going to assume handsome Tom Lynch, will he be drafted way too early for a guy who's only had the one good year fantasy-wise?
No.
I'm going to say, no, you don't think so?
No. No.
What round do you see, Matt?
He'd be in the middle somewhere, probably in the second half of the middle rounds, maybe.
I think someone will reach a bit early for him. Just on name brand, and now that he's at the Tigers, who are flying.
The best thing is, you know, he absolutely tears up the Blues every time he plays them. Richmond will play Carlton round one, trade him out after his 7-goal haul. His value will never be higher.
Captain, win the first round. See you later. 50s for the rest of the year. And the last question is from Scott Warwick on Twitter. Now, he asked, he did a roast today, but he had salads. Is he out of order, or is that okay?
He is perfectly fine. Salads are good any time. I'm not one to say you wake up in the morning and you have to have porridge or toast. That's crap. You can have salad any time you want to have salad. It's like the reverse Seinfeld. He could have cereal at 10 p.m. at night. You can have salad with breakfast, and you can have salad with everything. That's why you go to a restaurant, and part of the menu is sides, salad. So you can have soup and salad. You can have roast and salad. You can have chips and salad. It's for every single meal, every single time. It's great stuff.
This is a two-parter. First, we are recording on a Sunday here. I was at a luncheon today, and yes, we had roast pork and lamb for lunch, and yes, salads were on the side. And number two, Statesman, what the hell sort of salad are you having for breakfast?
Any salad will do.
Salads for breakfast was actually the name of Statesman's Talking Head cover band in the 80s.
But as we spoke a little bit earlier in the show, the traders did drop a bit of an early Christmas present by showing us a few positions for the 29th season. So we'll run through them quickly. We've got Danger as a mid-forward, Lunchmeat as a mid-forward, Dunkley is mid-forward. We've said Hoff is ruck forward, Toby McLean retains his mid-forward, Tim Kelly mid-forward. Zach Bailey mid-forward, Paddy Dow, Banfield, Warpole, Setterfield all have mid-forward next year. Andy McGrath has mid-defence. Lockie Whitfield, Connor Blakely and the sick dog, James Sicily, all defenders only. We thought that was coming for sick dog, but I didn't expect it with Blakely. I thought he might have been DPP still for 2019. No. Maybe. The Yo Man, mid only, as we've said. Angus Brayshaw, Taranto, a mid only. That's really going to...
Shocking.
It is very shocking. So puts him maybe even undraftable. Who knows? Unless you get him late and hopefully...
He's a bargain now, I reckon.
You reckon?
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sneaky chance to get forward status later in the year, maybe?
No. Sneaky chance to average 100.
Yep. Okay.
Agreed.
Seisman, mid only. Ed Langdon loses his DPP. Reece Conker, a mid only. We did discuss him in previous shows, thinking he may have had a DPP. Brett Deludio is a mid only. Jed Gotterson, Steve, I think you called it, will be mid only. As we said, Rocky's a mid only. And Hutchings, mid only. Statesman Man Partiff is a forward only. Dalhouse mid-forward, Hanley and Harrison Wigg defenders only, Chad Wingard mid-forward, Harms midfielder, Salem defender, Jack Zeeble is a forward only, which we predicted, thought he might have been DPP, but quite like him as a forward now. Aaron Hall is a midfielder, Wayne Miller a defender only, Greenwood and McCluggage both midfielders only. I was hoping McCluggage may have kept forward status for another year.
That hurts, but, I reckon.
I think so too. Tommy Cutts as a mid only, which is just ridiculous. Dale Thomas, defender only. Nick Newman, defender only. Darcy Parrish, mid forward yet again. Caleb Daniel is a forward. So he did spend a bit of time in the back line as a defender, so but still pretty handy in the forward line there. Michael Walters, mid forward. Harley Bennell, how he gets mid only is just perplexing. Steve Hill, as Steve said, is defender only. Will Langford, Mitch Wallace, Isaac Heaney, Jack Nunes, Dave Armitage, Blake Akers, all mid-forwards. Dusty retains his midfield status, and Tom Boyd is a ruck forward. So that's, unless I've missed something, that's pretty much all that's come out for positional changes for 2019. So some interesting ones, but some that we're just going to have to cop.
I was actually pretty... Sorry.
No.
I was actually really surprised with the Harley Benner one. I kind of thought he was just going to be waffle only.
Well, yeah.
I'm giving you nothing. I love Harley Benner.
You only get one chance at your first gag.
It hurt just like everyone else said it would.
Fucking Jesus.
Wow.
Gotta pick your spots, Cam. What the hell was... What were we going to talk about?
What were you going to talk about? You were going to say something before Cam rudely interrupted you?
Yeah, you interrupted me with that shit. I can't even remember.
Not to worry, not to worry. I'm sure we'll be seeing more positional changes coming out throughout the summer. And as we know, once these first positional changes come up, it means it's ranking season. So we are in the thick of it as at the moment. I haven't started mine, but I've got an idea because, yeah, I like to wait till when these positions come out just to give me a clearer picture of what's going on in the fantasy spectrum. All right, we'll wrap this up so Statesman can go have his dinner salad, and if he's got leftover from lunch salad, who knows. But thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.